Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Hello and welcome to Pole Position, the motorsport show here on Rock Sport Radio. It's Andy Alston with you alongside Adam Todd, broadcasting live on DAB Digital Radio across central Scotland, online and on TuneIn. So on the show this week, Ferrari with no chance as Mercedes coast in France, Jean-Éric Vergne takes the win in Bern, MotoGP is back as Marquez leads the pack, and Breen returns to the world rally scene. All this and more on Pole Position. Now, Lewis Hamilton cruised to his sixth win of the season after winning the French Grand Prix last weekend. He finished ahead of his Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas, with Ferrari's Charles Leclerc rounding off the podium. And Adam, fair to say, not the most exciting race in the world, if we're being totally honest, but again, fair play to Mercedes, taking another win in the right place at the right time. The car's so dominant, nothing but respect for what they've achieved so far.
Oh, exactly, and they deserve a lot of credit. In situations like this, when one team dominates, it's easy to say, oh, this is Mercedes' fault, it's boring, but it's completely up to the other teams, to Ferrari and to Red Bull, to step up, and they're not doing it. And for me, Lewis Hamilton has one hand on this championship already, 76 points clear of Ferrari Sebastian Vettel. That's more than three race wins, and Hamilton is exactly 100 points better off than Charles Leclerc and the other Ferrari, which is the equivalent of four race wins, and this is just after eight races, which should cause real alarm to Ferrari. And for me, I can't see Valtteri Bottas challenging Hamilton for the title, and I feel that Bottas is unable to take the battle to Hamilton the same way Nico Rosberg did when he was at Mercedes. So for me, the championship is as good as done. Mercedes deserve credit, and so does Hamilton, because he's just stepped up another gear since the Spanish Grand Prix.
But I'll tell you something, Adam, the thing that concerns me about the rest of the pack is that they were so far off the pace in qualifying. You know, it's not like they were a couple of tenths behind or whatever. Leclerc was over half a second behind when he was there in third place.
Yeah, and it's completely unacceptable for Ferrari, it really is, and it's such a shame, because at the start of this season, everybody was saying this is the most excited they've been since 2014. We were all expecting Ferrari and Mercedes to have a proper duel. We were expecting Leclerc to take the fight to Vettel and Hamilton for the championship, and perhaps Red Bull Honda later on in the season could get their act together, but it has been extremely disappointing from Ferrari's perspective. And as you said at the top of the show, fair play to Mercedes, because they're doing an outstanding job at the moment. It's up to the rest to catch them. Unfortunately, it's not even two-tier F1 this season either. It's about three, four tiers we're going here, because Ferrari are clearly the second best. Max Verstappen's doing miracles with the Red Bull, in my opinion. Then you've got the midfield, and then you've got Williams wandering about at the back. So it's not in a great place, Formula 1, at the moment, but let's hope for a good race this weekend.
Now, of course, yes, as you say, Adam, we have got another race to look forward to on Sunday. As the action heads to the Red Bull Ring, and joining us from Austria, I'm delighted to say, is Luke Murphy from Formula Spy. And Luke, I think it's fair to say, a bit of pressure on Max Verstappen and Pierre Gasly to put in a good performance this weekend.
Good evening, guys. I think there's got to be a little bit of pressure from the Red Bull camp to deliver a good performance. Probably more so on Pierre Gasly's side. I don't think Red Bull would really want to have another French Grand Prix-style performance from him. But I think they've already tried to quell expectations, especially Max Verstappen in the press conference today. He was asked directly, what do you think your chances are of a repeat result? And he just flat out said there's little chance at all, whilst we've still got Mercedes and Ferrari still running around. So I think they've done well to kind of lower the expectations a little bit, but it's there's still going to be a load of expectant Max Verstappen fans in the Max Verstappen grandstand at turn three, I think. So unfortunately it might not be quite to their liking, but I'm sure they'll give it their best shot.
Look, there's been lots of people suggesting on social media, and I want to get your thoughts on this. They've been saying that Danny Kvyat should step up from Toro Rosso to replace Pierre Gasly. What do you make of that situation? Do you think there's any mileage in that?
I think, as they kind of say, there's no smoke without fire. And as we know, Red Bull Racing, they can be pretty cutthroat with their drivers. And I think it's come about because Kvyat's actually doing a really good job. I think if Kvyat had just returned to Formula One and maybe still done a fairly mediocre job, maybe still not had his confidence return, then it probably wouldn't be a factor in the equation. But I think because Kvyat's done such a good job so far, he's performing really well in the Toro Rosso, then I think they kind of have to look at him. Personally, I think they might not gain a lot straight away from doing that. I think they'll be just as well seeing how close Pierre Gasly can get to Max Verstappen. And I think they can. I think because Red Bull aren't going to be challenging for that many race wins, or definitely not the championship, they've got this freedom to kind of decide when they think Gasly's decided that it's not the right time to keep Gasly in Red Bull.
Now, McLaren are the best of the rest in Formula One at the moment. Look, fourth in the constructor standings on 40 points. What do you put that down to?
Well, I think operationally they've really had a good hard look at themselves, and it sort of got triggered from the switch to Renault engines power unit, should we say, from when they parted company with Honda. And it was when they switched to the Renault power units that they had all these benchmarks to compare themselves to, the Works Renault team and Red Bull, and they were behind them both. And so all these kind of historical claims that McLaren could sort of, they would suggest that they had a better chassis than the engine. And when this swap came about, it proved that that wasn't really true. So that was the main kicker for them to say, yeah, we really need to sort ourselves out. And they had a few changes of staff as well. And they brought in Andrea Seidel, who's had a very well-decorated sports car career and other forms of motorsport as well, and he's this pure racer character who's probably going against the kind of marketing kind of bigger heads they have in McLaren. So I think he's partially to be credited as well. But yeah, McLaren have just simply they've had the wake up calls, and now hopefully this is the start of them on something of a comeback trail.
Hi, Luke. Adam here. I'm interested to get your thoughts on the Full Works Renault team, because at the start of the season I was expecting a lot from them, certainly to be a lot closer to Red Bull Honda, and perhaps if Red Bull Honda didn't work out, then they could even be the third best team in Formula 1. But it's been a real tough start for Renault. There was signs in Canada with a strong result. Last time out in France, Ricciardo did a decent job, but of course got the penalty. But overall, they've got to be disappointed with the start to this season.
Yeah, you're right. I think they've got to be disappointed with it, and I think there's a collective disappointment from the fans as well, because they've seen this these top three teams, Mercedes, Ferrari, and Red Bull, just at the top of Formula One for so long, and if there was to be a team that breaks away from the midfield and gets into those top three teams, one of the candidates you'd have thought last year would have been Renault. But one of the issues that they had was they weren't able to fully utilise their 2019 spec power unit, and they had a few reliability concerns in that, and that I believe meant they had to effectively turn down a little bit. And it's only in recent races where they've been able to kind of ramp up things a little bit, and of course being a manufacturing team with a bigger budget, they've got developments and updates and big and small come in for most of the races. So I think they've really they've picked up the pace more recently, definitely. They've been disappointed with their French Grand Prix outing, but I think they've started to maybe understand the car a little bit more now, and I think over the second half of the season they'll probably start to show their strength a little bit more.
And one story I'm interested to get your thoughts on regards to the rival teams to Mercedes. There's been a push to move back to the 2018 tyres. Ferrari, Sebastian Vettel, they believe that if they move back to the 2018 tyres, that could perhaps have some impact on the pecking order. What's your take on that, and how likely is it that come the Belgian Grand Prix after the summer break, we will have moved back to the 2018 tyres?
I think there's a chance that it will happen. It's something that I think the FIA and the organisers of Formula One, they're certainly not against mid-season changes. I think it does depend on whether there's enough teams who support the change to get it pushed through. As you mentioned, Mercedes are quite rightly heavily against it because they've won every race in 2019 and they seem to be understanding the tyres a lot better than their rivals. I think there may be some other candidates who would be against the changes. First team that comes into my mind is maybe Racing Point. They've had some really good kind of long stints on, the likes of Lance Stroll. If he has a bad qualifying, he does like a long stint in the race, and they've really made the tyres work over a race distance. So they may not be receptive to going back to the 2018 spec tyres. So I think because Formula One does seem to, where possible, run on a kind of majority vote system, I think it may just fail in changing, but maybe for the sake of the sport, I'm quite happy to be wrong on that one.
Look, putting the front runners to one side for just a moment, which driver has impressed you the most so far this season?
I think as I mentioned before, Kvyat is really come back as at the start of the season, people were mentioning Valtteri Bottas 2.0, but I think the same can be said for Danny Kvyat. He's kind of gone away and rebuilt and come back seemingly a much stronger driver against Albon, who's not a bad driver. He's done some good drives himself this season. But apart from that, I think Daniel Ricciardo is close to probably making the Renault team his own. I know Hulkenberg's contract is up towards the end of the season, so Daniel Ricciardo may have just come in and taken a firm hold of the Renault team with his performances. I think he's like 6-1 up or something in qualifying over Hulkenberg, and he's outscored him as well. Also, I think compliments to Carlos Sainz as well. He's really scored some big points for McLaren, some really good starts from him as well. I think it's looking like a really good battle in this kind of Formula 1.5 championship that is being dubbed. some really outstanding drives from them.
And look, it's been a tough season for Romain Grosjean and Haas in general, it must be said. Every year we sit here and wonder at the beginning of the season, will this be the year where Haas kick on and really challenge? But for one reason or another, it's just not clicking at that team at the moment.
No, it's a shame because they had some really strong performances, and it was pretty much Haas versus Renault last year. And I think people were thinking that it would just be maybe a continuation of that. But they've had some difficulties. I think Gunter Steiner was saying that the last race was probably their worst of their short Formula One career. Canada as well. He was telling Kevin Magnussen to just, shut up and get on with it. And sorry, just the car was impassive in the background. I think they're probably one of the teams that would be supporting a tyre change as well, because I think they've been struggling with the tyres as well. So I think that probably plays a big part in it. But also, I think if they don't get their act together fairly soon, they may find themselves out-budgeted by the likes of McLaren and Renault, so it's going to be a big ask for them to improve on their fifth place in the championship from last season.
Look, there's been a few interesting stories doing the rounds that I want to get your thoughts on. The first one relates to Nico Hülkenberg, who you mentioned there, that Daniel Ricciardo, is really making Renault his own, and perhaps Hülkenberg may be looking to leave, and there's been rumours that he could be potentially joining Red Bull in the future, and with Hülkenberg potentially going, that would free up a space for Esteban Ocon at Renault. Any truth to those rumours?
Oh, it's a no smoke without fire scenario. I think the key in that is whether Esteban Ocon feels like he can get into a Mercedes seat for next season. As we saw the first couple of races, Valtteri Bottas was driving very well, He's had a bit of a dip now, but he'll, you know, if he wins the next couple of races, that might put Valtteri Bottas as the favourite to stay on at Mercedes next season. So I think a lot hinges on that. But Esteban Ocon, he does have history with the Renault team. He's done some test outings there for them before. So it's definitely not an unlikely link. And I think I'm not too sure about the Hülkenberg to Red Bull side of things. I think Red Bull, where possible, they do go for their own drivers. So I think at this point they'd be more likely to go for Dani Kvyat or maybe keep Gasly on for another season and maybe fast track one of their other junior drivers. They've got O'Ward, who's making his Formula 2 debut this weekend. He's recently come onto the Red Bull books. So I think, like with any Formula 1 silly season, there's a whole lot of if, buts and maybes.
And another, this again, talking about the silly season, perhaps wishful thinking from some, Fernando Alonso potentially back to Ferrari. That one's kind of been doing a bit in social media. I doubt there's much truth to that, but, you know, it seems to have a bit of a falling out with McLaren since the Indy 500 drama, and last week, obviously, the news that Sorokin's going to be the reserve driver and there's no plans to use Fernando Alonso in future F1 tests. Do you think we could see Alonso back in Formula 1 in 2020, or is it very unlikely?
Stranger things have happened, but at the moment, I don't really see the appeal in Ferrari doing that, unless you know, a lot can change in that time. But I think the likes of Vettel and Leclerc are doing at least okay at the moment. You know, they're still very quick drivers. So I'm not sure that the kind of harmony that Vettel and Leclerc have would want to be disrupted by possibly Alonso coming back in. I mean, he's quite well known as being quite a demanding employee, shall we say? And I'm not quite sure that Ferrari would want to maybe risk that and have someone come in demanding to be number one, you know, straight away like that. But yeah, for me, I'm going to class that as very unlikely.
And Luke,
at the moment.
Luke, just finally, is there anyone else that you'll have your eye on at the Austrian Grand Prix this weekend?
In terms of other drivers to watch out for?
Yeah, just in general, anyone or any teams that kind of need a good result, do you think?
I think it'll be interesting to see if McLaren can maintain their form heading off the back of a very, very successful French Grand Prix, and there's a lot of fan hype about that now. So if they can do back-to-back results, I think that would be good for their huge fan base. I think other than that, I think you've got Albon, who's going to be starting from the back of the grid. So, and he's known that from earlier in the week. So he's going to be concentrating on the long runs, and you can overtake in Austria fairly easily. So if the Toro Rosso's got a good car that's set up for overtaking, he might be one to watch out for coming through the field. He did something similar in China. He started from the pit lane and came back to score a point. So he might be worth a bit of entertainment in the race. Apart from that, I just can't wait to see how if Ferrari can make any inroads into Mercedes' lead, because this was a track where that was touted as one of the venues where Ferrari could potentially get on top of Mercedes. So I think if there's going to be any hope from Ferrari, it needs to start now, and it needs to be a convincing win.
I know, absolutely. Look, always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your time here on the show.
Take care, guys. Cheers.
That's Luke Murphy from Formula Spy there. And stay with us as we talk about another dramatic Formula E race up next on Rock Sport Radio.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.
Now, Jean-Éric Vergne took another step towards defending his Formula E title after he won the Berne E Prix last weekend, extending his championship lead to 32 points over Lucas de Grassi with just two rounds to go. Now, after the race, Vergne told Formula E Radio that he was pleased to take the win after a rather long week.
Yeah, I'm actually really, really tired now. I think I need a week of rest, you know, with Le Mans last weekend, simulator straight away on the Monday to prepare this race. I'm so glad with the result. You know, the guys worked so well and couldn't get any better today. And the end with the rain was really, really stressful, and I had to be careful. You know, I'd rather finish second than in the world for the championship. So I was, of course, trying to win the race, but also being extra cautious.
Now, of course, the big talking point from the race came on the opening lap, when Pascal Wehrlein and Max Günther collided at the first turn, blocked the track and the rest of the pack, causing a traffic jam. But several drivers cut the chicane to avoid the blockage, gained several places along the way, including Degrassi, but race officials decided to restart the race behind the safety car using the original grid positions, much to the anger of the likes of Degrassi and a couple of other drivers who had cut the chicane in order to avoid the incident. Now, let's look back on this and more by speaking to Nathan Hine from our friends at the Checkered Flag. Nathan, what was your take on that incident right at the start of the race?
Well, that was a very controversial moment of the race. Of course, some people thought it was inevitable for the start of the race. Such a tight corner after quite a long straight was always going to cause a few incidents and accidents on the opening lap. But in regards to how they restarted the race, I thought it was very proper because they hadn't all formally crossed a timing line which they could take the result from. So the stewards ultimately had no choice.
Mm. And Lucas de Grassi and Felipe Massa were both having a full and frank discussion, shall we say, with a couple of the FIA officials over the kind of the decision to reorder the pack. But it's one of the ones, just like you say, they didn't cross the timing point, but you can't help but feel even just a little bit sorry for some of the drivers that were caught out there.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Massa was up to 4th, Degrassi was up to 8th, and only finished 9th at the end of the race. So, you know, if Lucas was able to start in the top 10, sure, he'll be making his way up to the top 5. And in the way the championship has now evolved, it certainly put him at a severe disadvantage. But, you know, there wasn't really much the stewards could do in that situation.
Mm. Nathan, this was yet another time this season where the red flags have been brought out early in a race, and you know it's the fans in the stands that I've got a lot of sympathy towards, because you know they're coming there, they're getting ready for some thrilling action, but then we're seeing these lengthy delays as a result of the marshals having to clear up the debris, remove the cars and what have you. Do you feel that this is beginning just to have a little bit of a negative impact on the series with the volume of incidents that we're having throughout the course of the season?
Potentially the tracks are a bit narrow for these cars now, because we've evolved so much compared to the season 1 cars, where we are now in the season 5 cars, you know, doing 250 kilowatt hours. Sorry, so it's so much faster compared to where we were. So perhaps we need to look at the types of tracks that we're going to and bear that in mind and picking future venues.
Mm. So Nathan, how do we get around that then? Because a lot of the races are currently under contract to be held as part of next season's championship. You know, so what can be done, at least perhaps in the short term, to try and get around this issue?
Well, I suppose a few things could be done. You know, we could have a situation where we decide certain points of the track not to start the race, or it could be a rolling start in some particularly dangerous venues where the likelihood of a red flag or a safety car early in the race is more than other events. But in terms of the short term, there isn't a huge amount that can be done with the existing venues, but looking more longer term, we need to try and think about the types of venues that we go to in the future.
Hi Nathan, Adam here at the front. It was another superb drive from Jev to hold off Mitch Evans, and it's fair to say Vern now has one hand on the championship trophy.
Yeah, definitely. It was a superb performance from Vern, especially in qualifying, you know, going out in the dusty, dirty Group 1 qualifying, do the lap he did in aggregate qualifying to enable himself to take that pole position was superb, and a huge pressure drive from Vernon just soaked it up and took another race win.
And where would you say this run of form has come from Vern? Because he seemed to have quite a shaky start, was second in the opening race of the season, but he went on a run where he went three races without scoring a single point. But in the second half of the season, he's taken three race victories and really looks like the dominant driver in the championship, which he did last season.
Yeah, obviously, with this qualifying system, sometimes you have ups and sometimes you have downs. And in after his second place in Ad-Diriyad, he was then in the top bunch in the championship. Then when he was lowered down in the championship, he was then able to kickstart up again. And from there, he's just been able to adapt a bit better than some of the other drivers in the top bunch in the championship and continued his rise from there.
And Nathan, Sebastian Buemi rounding off the podium, third place at his home race. Still no win, though. I mean, this is quite an incredible run that he's going on. He seems to be one of the unluckiest drivers in Formula E.
Yeah, it's amazing. It wasn't that long ago that it was Buemi who was dominating Formula E, taking race win after race win, a whole heap of pole positions, and now he can't seem to get a race victory. It's been over 12 months since the Swiss driver won a race, so he'll be looking to correct that in New York, but it's going to be difficult.
And Nathan, just finally, I want to get your thoughts on the kind of Mercedes entry for next year, because they had a couple of days of testing earlier this week. What do you think we've learned from that, and what do you feel the expectations will be for that team going into next season?
Yeah, they did a lot of running, very good test from Mercedes, clocking up 218 laps, you know, having Stoffel Vandoorne, who is one of their confirmed race drivers for next year, alongside the other HWA driver, Gary Paffett, first time in a Mercedes Formula E car. And they certainly would have learnt a lot from that, and then will be assessing as to how to progress into as they approach season six. But they go in as a new team. Obviously, it is Mercedes, so there will be pressure, but they'll take it race by race and see how they go by the end of the season.
Great stuff, Nathan. Thanks very much for your time and joining us here on Pole Position.
Thank you very much.
That's Nathan Hine from our friends at the Checkered Flag there, speaking to us on Rocksport Radio. Now, Adam, I just want to get a quick recap on all things MotoGP, because we had Etiassen this weekend at round 8 of this year's championship. The big question, of course, is can anyone stop Marc Marquez? Because he saw his lead at the top of the rider standings increase to 37 points after his win in Catalunya. How do you see things shaping up?
Well, it's going to be a fascinating race. Assen, always a terrific track, which riders and fans alike just love. Marquez has a decent record at Assen, been on the podium every year since he moved up to the Premier class, taken two victories though, so he's not always won there, so perhaps not one of his best tracks, and that's saying something, despite the fact he has been on the podium every year. But that's Marc Marquez for you. Of course, next up is Germany, where he's been completely dominant there. So it'll be interesting to see how it gets on. It's not a track that necessarily suits the Ducati either, so it could go one or either two ways. It's going to be either Marquez will kind of dominate, as he's done at a few races this season, or it's going to be a really tight battle, which I think we're all hoping for.
And Andrea Dovizioso's championship chances took a bit of a hit, I think, after that incident with Jorge Lorenzo last time out in Catalunya. How important is it for that Ducati rider to have a strong result this weekend?
Massive. He has to outperform Marc Márquez. It has been a woeful couple of weeks for Andrea Dovizioso in terms of the championship. Two tracks where Ducati had to beat the Honda, and Marc Márquez, in my opinion, to win the championship. Mugello with the long stretch, which suits the Ducati due to the high top speed, and also at the Circuit de Catalunya. Last time, of course, it was unfortunate for Dovizioso being tangled up by Jorge Lorenzo because he was running at the front in the last race. But, you know, 37 points to make up, and Marc Márquez, that's going to need a lot of attention, and really you need another Marquez retirement just to get yourself back level pegging. And let's not forget, Marc Márquez has already had one retirement in the US Grand Prix, and this is what Dovizioso and Ducati would have been fearful for. The fact Márquez had already had a retirement from a race, they hadn't yet, they were still trailing in the championship. Márquez had built up a safety buffer, and now what you're seeing with Dovizioso is, you know, he was in the mix for the championship, and now all of a sudden that one retirement, 37 points back. And this is really showing, though, how MotoGP's played out, because with that Márquez retirement, it kind of masked how, not badly, but just how good Márquez had been, because the championship was still close. Now 37 points, for me, you're not making that up.
Adam, I've really enjoyed watching Suzuki's Alex Rins this season, because he's had an unbelievable start. Just 2 points off Dovi in second, of course, as well.
Well, we've discussed many times on this show whether Alex Rins and Suzuki can actually take the championship fight to Marc Márquez and Honda, and I think everybody's in agreement that sooner or later Rins and Suzuki will have a package that will allow him to fight for the championship. But on those tracks with the top speed, he has struggled. In Mugello in Italy, he did a terrific job to finish fourth behind Danilo Petrucci, who won the Grand Prix there, Marc Márquez and Andrea Dovizioso, the Ducati. So Rins is doing a sterling job, he really is, and so are Suzuki, and it's great to have Suzuki back at the front of MotoGP. We need them there, especially with Yamaha's troubles at the moment. So the more manufacturers we have at the front fighting, it's great for the fans, great for the spectacle. But Alex Rins is certainly a future star. He's doing a great job this season, already won a Grand Prix, and he'll certainly win another one.
Oh, absolutely. All right, let's talk rally now. And there's plenty to talk about in the rally scene. And joining us ever is, of course, David Talley. David, unfortunately, we've got a sad story to report with the death of Manus Kelly at the Donegal rally last weekend. Just a real shock, that one.
It's an absolute shock. And it's because it doesn't happen very often these days. We think back to those of us that are old enough, to the mid-80s, and much like Grand Prix in the 70s, there was I'm not saying acceptance, but it happened. It happens so rarely now that when it does, the shock felt is much greater. We had an accident on the Dunoon Presents Argyle Rally on Saturday, putting a young Erskine man in hospital, which seemed bad enough. And then the news on Sunday that we'd lost Manus Kelly due to an accident on the event, it just made it quite a horrible weekend, really.
No, definitely. And Manus, of course, a local to the Donegal area as well. That will have had a real devastating impact to the local community.
He's a councillor, he's a well-known businessman in the area, he's an all-round nice guy. He won the event the last 3 years, and just one of those, I wouldn't call it a freak accident, accidents happen. An in-rally car, this is a new Hyundai i20 R5 built to the very latest specifications. The teams, the designers, they all design these cars to withstand as much as they possibly can. And if he'd had that accident 6 inches further forward or 6 inches further back, we wouldn't be having this conversation. It just was exactly the wrong part of the car that hit the fence post that caused his untimely death. It's just horrible.
Yeah. David, there's a couple of stories that I kind of want to get your thoughts on, starting with Craig Breen, who is he's in for Rally Finland. He'll be driving with Hyundai alongside Paul Nagel. What's your reaction to this whole situation? Because I guess the question is, why Breen and not Hayden Paddon or even Mads Osberg?
I think Craig has been putting himself about a lot this year. He lost his drive from Citroën at the end of last year. He's driven anything that anybody's been prepared to put him in this year, and he's done incredibly well. He's kept himself match fit, and he's obviously one of the coming men of the sport. Hayden Paddon, he's doing his stuff in New Zealand, his home country. I don't know whether he'll ever make it back to the World Championship, but Craig is a big miss in the championship. He's come so close so often to winning an event and just not had the luck. We now know this car can win with Danny Sordo winning last time out. So I think it's a very good opportunity for Craig. He's put himself out there. He's in Ypres this weekend, competing in Belgium. So he was in Donegal last weekend. He's just kept himself match fit, put himself around, put himself in front of team managers, and he's obviously managed to get a deal together to go to Finland.
And I guess all of this just underlines how tough it is for good drivers like Craig Breen to get a seat at World Rally level.
The cost of world rallying now, the cost of certain drivers, Citroën would normally have run three cars, and he would still have been in a Citroën this year. Because they've paid big money to get Sébastien Ogier into the car, their budget went that way rather than running three cars. They can't afford to run three cars. Craig lost his seat, which is dreadful. He's a really nice guy, Craig, and he lost his seat. So rather than sit and mope about it, he's just put himself out there. And yes, it's very difficult. There's a very few cars in the World Rally Championship being run by manufacturer or representative teams, and the guys sitting in these seats are hanging on to them by grim death.
And another driver who is on the move is young Kalle Rovanperä. He looks set to be driving for Toyota next year. Now, of course, both mentioned that both parties are denying a deal is done at this stage, but David, what do you make of this one? A very, very talented young driver there going straight into a Yaris for next year.
He's been doing WRC2. He's got experience of some of the stages. He's bounced off quite a bit of the undergrowth, as young drivers sometimes do when they're learning their trade. But he is one of the coming men of the sport. We're looking at people like Jari-Matti Latvala, who is approaching the end of his career. Let's be honest about it. He's tried many times to win this championship. He's still got the burning desire to do it, but we know of his emotional issues, and I think we'll find that there will be changes within the Toyota team next year, and bringing in a new face again to give them experience to be the future of the sport. And he is exciting. He's a son of a world championship driver, Harry Rovanperä, so he's been around the championship all his years, so getting him into a world car, I'm sure that they're going to have to buy quite a few spare body panels, but he will get there. He's got the speed. There's two ways to be a rally driver. You're either the Colin McRae or Chris Meek type that drives the thing absolutely flat out and has the accidents but learns how to not have the accidents, or the Richard Burns approach where you have a certain amount of speed and you gradually build up that extra bit of speed to get to the championship. Kalle is very much in the former. He just goes absolutely flat out.
And you mentioned Chris Meek there, David. I think Meek will probably stay put at Toyota. The big question for me, though, in that camp is around Ott Tanak. How do you see that situation shaping up?
Interesting. I suspect Ott is going to be on the move. I apologise for not being available last week for this programme. I was watching Ott Tanak, the movie, in a movie theatre in Cumbria. And it's actually, if anybody's interested at all, a chance to get to see that film. It's very, very revealing about Ott's life and how he's gone through getting to where he is in the World Championship at the moment. Very, very interesting background information. Lots of stuff with his family and his mentor and all the rest of it. So, a good movie, but I suspect that we might see Ott on the move for 2020.
So, David, just help me understand this one. What's the incentive for Tanak to move on from that Toyota team at the moment? Because he's in a car that's competitive. He's certainly the man at the moment, in my opinion, in the World Rally scene. Top of the driver's standings. Why would he look to move on from Toyota?
I don't know whether he's absolutely 100% happy there. Obviously, he's got the equipment, but I get the feeling that it's not the family atmosphere that possibly he's used to. So that might be something that's moving against it. There might just be opportunities elsewhere for him to further his trade. Yes, he's the man of the moment. We both picked him to win in Sardinia, and he almost did all by the last 3 miles, but nobody remembers who won the Indianapolis 499, so you have to be at the end to to take the win. We got a win for Danny Sordo, which was wonderful for Danny. He'd hung around and put in the times. He benefited from a slightly better road position early on, but he put a very good drive, sensible drive together and came away with the goodies. Came with Sunderland, got it all together again, was heading for a bottom step of the podium, ended up on the second place in the podium, his best result. So very interesting event. But again, we come back to this thing that Sebastien Ogier, out on the first day, made a wee boo-boo, broke the suspension, wasn't carrying a spare part, and his two main title rivals could have buried him. But no, they both have their own problems. And Sebastien, although he's not leading the championship, he's still sitting there, niggling away in that group of three, still in with a very strong shout of yet another championship.
Mm. David, I just want to get your thoughts on the Scottish and the British scene, if I may. And just starting with the Scottish action, Ewan Thorburn winning the Dunoon Argyle Rally last weekend. That gave him a 19-point lead now at the top of the standings. Another good drive from him. I mean, he kind of, you know, he had to work hard for it, of course. He had that puncture on stage two, but again, another strong performance.
Another strong performance. Gary Pearson was keeping him very, very honest until he had his own problems later in the event. The two, Gary, he just can't get a break. One of these Chris Meek type characters, he just can't get the break. Ewan just keeps plugging away, and Ewan's a very, very good driver. Don't take nothing away from him, and he's got a very good car for these events, and he's there at the end, and he is the one that to finish first. First, you've got to finish, and he is getting there, and excellent result for him. A great event out in the wilds of Argyle. 200 million midges watching the event, but it was a great event.
And credit to Bruce McCombie as well. His first podium in about a year or so, I believe, too.
Yes, again, there's so many good drivers now in competitive cars, and the Argyle stages haven't been used for a wee while, so maybe a little bit of a leveller. The driver's not quite so familiar with all the stages, maybe. But, a great event and great performances all round.
And, David, just finally, we've got some action to look forward to in the British scene, as you alluded to earlier on. British Rally Championship heading to Europe. Who should we be keeping an eye on this weekend?
Well, Matt Edwards in the M-Sport Swift Go Fiesta is our championship leader. This is a slightly strange event because British Championship is joining in with a variety of other championships out in Ypres in Belgium. This is a phenomenal event, phenomenally popular in Europe. Lots of drivers wanting to pit themselves against the tarmac roads in Belgium, and it's a huge entry. And in the middle of that somewhere are the British competitors. So if you look at the overall event results, you probably will see the British competitors in the top 10, but certainly not leading the event. We hope they do. We would like to see the British drivers take on the best of the Europeans, but I think that's they don't have enough knowledge of intimate knowledge of these roads. Freddie Loic's been retired for 3 years, coming back to do the event just because he can. Multiple winner, former World Rally driver as well. So the British events are taken out of the main event, and they have their own scoring system within. So as far as the British Championship concerned, all the regulars are there out giving it plenty. But Matt, and then we've got Alex Laffey, who did well last year in the other Fiesta. He potentially is learning. He's learning his craft, and he did well last year. We'll see what he can do this year.
Absolutely, David. Thank you very much, as always, for your time here on the show.
Not at all, and we'll do it next year, next week, live from the Goodwood Rally stage at the Festival of Speed.
Lucky for some. David, good stuff. Thanks very much, as always.
No problem.
That's rally expert David Harley there.
Now let's find out the latest from the Scottish scene by getting the Superfast Scots Roundup with Glenn Alcock.
Hi guys, hello to everybody who's listening. So first of all, British GT, Johnny Adam, Graham Davidson dominated at Donington, so leading from the start until the finish in their Aston Martin Vantage GT3 after securing pole position. So it was a great weekend for both the drivers. It also made history with the first victory for the new Aston, and Graham Davidson received the Blank Pan Driver of the Weekend award. Also in British GT, in Logan, Cal McLeod brought the Mercedes AMG GT3 home in 10th place, and Glenn Geddie finished 11th in his Bentley Continental. Meanwhile, in GT4, Dean McDonald, Lewis Proctor got a second and third in the class in the McLaren 570S GT4s, and Sir Chris Hoy was competing too, and he finished overall 18th position in his GT4 Ford Mustang. Gordy Much, we've talked about him quite a lot over the last few while, so he was on form with a win at Donington as well in the second race of the Ginetta GT5 Challenge at Donington, and he finished second in race three, so that was really good stuff. And of course, we had lots of SMRC action at the weekend, and both you guys were there, so did you enjoy yourselves?
Oh, definitely, a fantastic event, Glenn. And I tell you what I really enjoy the fact as well is just in terms of value for money for motorsport on your doorstep, absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, I've always thought that myself, you know, like, you travel all over the place going to Grand Prix, or, you know, even in, if you want to travel just in the UK to British GT events and stuff, but at Knockhill, it's really, really professionally done. There's lots and lots of action, you know, a wide array of cars that you can see. I mean, we had a Formula One car at the weekend, you know, the 1992 footwork was on display, which John Paterson from the Legends was driving. And I mean, that was an incredible thing to witness, you know, blasting around Knockhill. The weather was fantastic as well, and there seemed to be quite a huge crowd. It is a really, really good day out. So anybody that's listening that hasn't been, I definitely recommend that they try and pop along for the next round on the 21st of July.
And Glenn, how would you sum up your weekend on the track?
Busy. So it was quite exhausting. So just to fill people in, I had the opportunity to test a Formula Ford car on the Saturday, and I really thought it was just going to be that. It was just going to be a wee test and nothing else. And then I got asked if I would race it on the Sunday in addition to competing in the Scottish C1 Cup. So that meant two qualifying sessions and four races. And the way some of the sessions run, it was quite, you know, exciting, because I pulled into scrutineering after qualifying in the C1 to get rushed to the front of the queue to jump out of the C1 and run down to the assembly area to get into the Formula Ford and go out and qualify for it. So it was very, very busy. The day went by in a flash, but it was incredible. You know, from an experience point of view, getting out on track in the Formula Ford was incredible. You know, I've driven single-seaters before, but it was flappy paddle gearboxes and stuff, so to use a little manual H-gate was new to me. And obviously they're a little bit different because they don't have the same kind of aero and the fact that they don't have wings. And I was always interested about how they would handle, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. You had to strike a balance between having only been in the car for one test session and then go out and qualify and try and bring it home in, you know, the same condition that you left the fits in. So I didn't feel that I was comfortable fully pushing, but apparently, you know, people seem to think that the times I was putting in for the first time being in the car, you know, were quite promising. So I really enjoyed it. I'd like to thank Adrian Haldane from Clone Motorsport for giving me the opportunity to do it, and the SMRC for, you know, sort of supporting that as well. A great experience. We have at the next round, it's 50 years of Formula Ford, and it's also the David Leslie Trophy. So the SMRC today has put a kind of communication out to lots of previous champions, basically trying to encourage them to come along to, you know, to celebrate this great class that we've got. I mean, it is the entry level on the, you know, the Formula ladder that would lead you to Formula One, and it would be great in the next SMRC round to get, you know, as many cars on the grid with some previous big names as possible. I don't think that'll be me, but you never know.
Glenn, I want to kind of get your thoughts on driving in the Formula 4s and then going back into the Citroën C1 and vice versa. How challenging was that for you to process in terms of, you know, obviously the speeds is quite different, the braking ability is much different. Did you find that quite challenging at all?
The fundamentals of racing and stuff are similar, but to be honest, I wasn't doing much racing in the Formula Ford. I was really more kind of almost doing like time trials around at the back of the pack. I had some, you know, new experiences like getting lapped and looking for blue flags and trying to stay out of people's way and stuff. That was a little bit different for me, but it was a good experience. But they are very different cars to drive, obviously, you know. Going back into the C1, I mean, you guys sat in it, so it is quite a stiff little car, but when you get in it and drive it after being in the Formula Ford, it made it feel like it was made of jelly, you know, and it's not. I mean, it's a good, proper, racy little car, but just the difference is huge, obviously. One thing I found that the single-seater, you could be so precise in it because you can see where your wheels are, so you can position them very accurately. I find that in the C1, especially in normal direction, a lot of the corners, the kind of A-pillar is hiding the apex. So, you know, you're positioning your wheels, but you can't really see where the curbing is sort of sometimes, just because of the way that the car, you know, the way the car's built with the roll cage and stuff like that as well. But yeah, a very different experience. You had to kind of reset your brain a little bit, like flick a switch just to say, right, I'm back in the C1 now. What do I need to do? And then jump back into the Formula Ford and then vice versa. But definitely a good experience. I mean, if you think back to the old days, you know, but you know, I'm a big fan of Jim Clark's. I mean, he was jumping into Formula 2 cars and, you know, Lotus Cortinas and stuff in the same weekend. You know, definitely an opportunity that comes like that, you wouldn't say no to. So I would, you know, like, if I got the opportunity again, then I would definitely go for it. But it's a great experience to say, you know, I've raced in Scottish Formula Ford. And if anybody's out there, you know, and they're thinking about competing as well, then, you know, we need to get more cars on the grid. And it is a great competitive championship. And, you know, people come along, they want to see real thoroughbred racing cars, I think, and the Formula Fords always attract that.
What I really like as well, Glenn, is the fact that you've come into the Citroën C1 Cup, made your debut there this season. Then you've gone straight into a Formula Ford environment, and you've been there. As you say, for first time around, your times were encouraging. That's a great advertisement for me for the SMRC and grassroots motorsport in Scotland in general. That you can just make that switch and you can go out there and enjoy yourself and have a great time.
Yeah, and I thought that myself, that, you know, for the SMRC to be able to say, look, you've got somebody who's a complete novice. I've only completed 3 races before this weekend. In actual fact, I did more racing this one weekend than I had for the rest of the season, really, if you put it all together. But, you know, I went out and I coped. And I think, you know, with a little bit more seat time, then the times would come down and get closer. I mean, they were doing 55-second laps, and I posted a few 59-second laps. So, you know, if I'd been really pushing it and, you know, not having to worry too much about financial implications of damaging the car or, you know, going out as I've just been out in the last round, I think I could have probably got down maybe into like the 57s. So, you know, that's promising. And it's definitely a good advert, I think, for the fact that the Scottish C1 Cup is the starting point for what could be, you know, a great motor racing career.
And Glenn, just finally, a quick word for the team behind the scenes at West College Scotland and everyone there who've been helping out your journey so far this season. How important has it been for you to have those guys helping you out there as the events go on?
Yeah, I mean, it's been absolutely brilliant. If we're talking about, you know, entering this thing together, then that's what we've done. They don't have any motorsport background, and neither did I. Well, I mean, I've loved motorsport my whole life, but I've not been, you know, had any racing experience. So we're learning what it means to be a driver and a team together. And we've obviously had some ups and downs already, you know, literally. But we've bounced back, I think, from that well. And you saw the car at the weekend, and they've done a good job in getting it back on track. And I can't thank them enough. And although I had the Formula Ford, you know, opportunity at the weekend, my focus really was on the C1 Cup. And I think that's where I had the most, you know, racing, because I was obviously, you know, in the thick of it and doing some wheel-to-wheel battling with some great drivers. So really, as the season goes on, then we hope we can just learn together and just keep improving.
Great stuff, Glenn. Thanks very much, as always, for your time. You're on Pole Position.
Brilliant. Thank you, guys. Cheers.
That's the Superfast Scots roundup there with Glenn Alcock. And Adam, you know, just Glenn was mentioning there about what a fantastic day it was up in Notcar too, but I actually had a little bit of sunburn.
I'm the exact same, actually. I'm glad people can't see my face, and this is radio we do, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. Just how many people were there as well, I felt. And, you know, some cracking action throughout. You know, some of the minis as well was really good. You know, and the beauty of it is you and I were kind of walking around the track. That's the thing. It's quite a quick lap, not kill anyway. And if you're up there for a full day of motorsport, just walk around the track, take in various different vantage points and you're treated to some fantastic racing along the way.
Yeah, exactly. Glenn touched on it there about expense. If you're going to Formula 1 races, you know, you buy your ticket and that's you for the entire day. But as you mentioned, Knockhill was great to go to different points of the track. Knockhill is a great track in terms of it's got lots of different characteristics, slight altitude changes as well, which is really exciting. And it was just a great day of racing. The amount of races you get to see for the price as well. Every category is different, you know, it's not as if it's the exact same cars all the time, so value for money certainly up there, and the weather was great, and this is where the real racing is, you know, at this level, you don't often see this as they get higher up in the category, so it was great to see.
No, absolutely. And next meeting of the SMRC at Knockhill, 21st of July, and that's a clockwise layout for the event. And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for on Pole Position this week, but we'll be back from 8 o'clock next Thursday night.
Love music. Live sport. Pole Position with Andy Alston and Adam Todd on Rock Sport Radio.